AM Columbus, W224 EG Madison, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News. The Biden interview. I'm Daria Albinger. President Biden says he is proud of what his administration has accomplished, and he wants to finish the work. But at 81, is he really up to it?
You know, the heart of your case against Donald Trump is that he's only out for himself, putting his personal interest ahead of the national interest. How do you respond to critics who say that by staying in the race, you're doing the same thing?
Oh, come on. Well, I don't think those critics know what they're talking about.
The president in an exclusive interview with ABC's George Stephanopoulos.
I know your doctor said he consulted with a neurologist. I guess I'm asking a slightly different question. Have you had the specific cognitive tests, and have you had a neurologist, a specialist, do an examination?
No, no one said I had to. No one said they said I'm good.
But the calls for Mr. Biden to step down continue, including from some in his own party. This is ABC News.
I'm Terry Bell with WMDX News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WMDX website at mad.radio. Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. A defiant President Biden tells a Wisconsin audience he's running and plans to win again.
I'm staying in the race. I'll beat Donald Trump.
The president concedes he had a bad night in last week's debate.
I'm not letting one 90-minute debate wipe out 3.5 years of work.
Biden told a crowd of about 1,000 supporters in Madison that Donald Trump is a convicted felon and a threat to democracy. The state Supreme Court is handing Wisconsin Democrats two big victories. Justices ruled election clerks can use ballot drop boxes as they see fit in this year's elections. Also, the court ruled the legislature's Joint Finance Committee overstepped its authority when blocking some of Governor Evers' actions. And that's what you need to know. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Life hack number 7. Get an iPhone 12 on Straight Talk.
Life hack.
Here's how it works. You walk into Walmart, go to the electronics section, ask for iPhone 12 with 5G and a dual camera system, and select the new Silver Unlimited plan. They'll smile because it's a good plan. You get real unlimited data all for just $20 a month for the whole first year. Get it at Walmart or StraightTalk.com. Straight Talk. Less dollars, more sense. Taxes and fees apply. Requires activation of iPhone 12 and a new Silver Unlimited plan or higher end auto pay enrollment. $25 a month service credit applied for up to 12 months if eligibility requirements are met. For network management practices, visit StraightTalk.com.
Mad Radio 92.7 FM, home of the John and Gordy Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Thursday was the 4th of July, the day we celebrate our independence, the day we celebrated the ideals of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We celebrated our democracy. And yet we're in a moment right now where democracy is in peril, possibly on the brink, and seems increasingly fragile. As there are those who, well, seek to destroy what this great nation is and what it means and what we are proud of for their ideology. And the reality is, we're facing real dangers. And most people have just kind of, for this idea of, well, that couldn't happen here, kind of just poo-pooed them away. And, you know, I was thinking about it today that, sadly, we may have already had our last free and fair election, the last one we will ever have in this country. Because, again, paying attention to what they are saying on the right, what the grand old party is saying out loud, what their surrogates are saying, what their think tanks, what their media voices, what their stars are saying is the Republican House may not certify any election a Democrat wins. And the idea being what they floated in the last presidential election, what they wanted to do to steal the election from Joe Biden, which was don't certify it in the House. You know, Mike Pence, stand up, do what's in the best interest of the country, or in the best interest of Trump, and don't certify the election. It will go to our Supreme Court, who increasingly is corrupt, and push it back to the House, because the original intent, and understand, they use that original intent language on purpose. Because originally, these votes were in the House of Representatives. So they're going to couch this all in terms of original intent. This is what the trifold hats, this is what the founders wanted. And look, we are at a critical turning point in our country's history. We are here. And our corporate-controlled mainstream media, there's no sense of urgency. And look, I was thinking today, I go, you know, it may already be too late to be sounding the alarm. Because there's no help on the Republican side. Understand, the grand old party, the GOP, once a proud and respected political institution that fought to free the slaves from bondage, now stands on the brink of a dangerous and regressive agenda. It's a plan that they seek to repeal the progress of the 20th century and reshape our society in a way that threatens the very fabric of democracy. Because we're hearing it already. Well, you know, we're not a democracy. We're a republic. Yet, hello, ding dong, they mean just about the exact same thing. But it's that we're couching things in terms. No, we're not a democracy. We're a republic. But what we know what they want to repeal the 20th century. They've been telling us this for decades. And look, it's not just merely a political strategy to make lives better. They don't care about you or me or anyone else. It's an ideological crusade. And it's what they've been waging against us for decades. This is not new. They've been doing this for decades, then planning this for decades. Billionaires have been funding this for decades. They've been taking over our schools, our media. They've been taking over the institutions of our country. And look, they're telling us if Trump gets elected, they're going to fire all the bureaucrats. They're going to weaponize government by making patronage again great again. And we're going to bring in the loyalists. And look, most politicians, all of the corporate media, and sadly, too many of us, we don't take their words seriously. So when Kevin Roberts, the president of the Heritage Foundation, a right-wing terror tank, the people behind Project 2025 say we're in the process of a second revolution, which will remain bloodless if the left allows it to be, which is basically saying, if you don't agree with us, we're going to kill you. And we're in a second revolution without telling you what that is. What is that second revolution that they talk of? Well, we know what they want to do. They want to turn the clock back on civil rights. They want to turn the clock back on women's rights. They want to turn the clock back on workers' rights. They want to eradicate environmental protections. They want undue health care reforms, education, and on and on. The list is extensive of what they want to turn the clock back on. And they're telling us out loud that they want to return us to the good old days of the 80s and 90s, and not the 1980s and 90s. Theirs is a vision of a bygone era where inequality, discrimination, exploitation ruled the day. The powerful held all the sway over the powerless. And again, I go back to which side are you on? Are you on the side of who is going to be the powerful? That list of billionaires who contribute to politicians and have bought the best democracy money can buy? Or are you going to be with the rest of us? Because think about it. If you were hungry enough and desperate enough to work in poverty conditions for deplorable wages and deplorable conditions, well, that would be your freedom, right? That would be your liberty. And you could clearly pull yourself up by the bootstraps along with everyone else. Now, what we know is to achieve their radical agenda, the Republicans have weaponized the court system. They've stacked the judiciary with right-wing ideologues and partisan judges. You know, activist judges. Maybe you've heard that before. They seek to dismantle the legal framework that protects our rights and our freedoms and has given us the groundwork, the building block, the foundation of what this country is. And look, as we are watching, they are using the courts as a tool to strike down all of the progress of the 20th century, all of the laws that helped workers, all of the regulations that protected consumers and workers and citizens. They're attempting to undermine the very foundation of this nation. And why? And why, you may ask? Well, simply more for them, less for us, more power, more control. But more money. Just the other day, perfect example, a Trump judge in Texas, a federal judge in Texas, put on hold the Federal Trade Commission's rule banning non-compete agreements, which overwhelmingly people were like, that's stupid. That, I don't know, PB&J is not proprietary. I shouldn't have to sign a non-compete agreement to make sandwiches. You got a Supreme Court justice in Clarence Thomas who thinks that the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, it might be unconstitutional. You've got billionaires going after the National Labor Relations Act as, you know, unconstitutional, unfair to them. They're going after contraception. They're going after marriage equality. They're telling us what they're doing. Make no mistake. The GOP assault on the 20th century is an attack on all of us. Red hat and blue hat alike. It's an attack on the progress we've made as a society and the hard fought, hard rights that we won, the freedoms that we cherish, the values that define us. They want their narrow-minded, white Christian male leadership. We can't stand idly by and allow this dangerous agenda to come to fruition. We can't. We must resist. We must dissent. We must organize, mobilize, and fight for our rights, our freedoms, our democracy. And how do we do that? Well, we got to hold the Republicans accountable for their reckless and destructive acts. We must stand together in solidarity to ensure that the progress of the 20th century and the future not be destroyed for us in this country. Got to tell you, the stakes, this election, we say all the time, this election is the most important. This is. This election, the choice is clear. If we allow the Republicans to take control and gain power, they will take us back to the future. And not in a good way. Seems simple to me. We stand and fight, or our grandchildren ask the question, how could they be so stupid? How could that happen here? Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. When we come back, Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman and political analyst, going to be here to share some thoughts on what's going on with President Biden. Does he step down? Does he forge on? Back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So polymarket.com, a betting service, evidently they're predicting 62%, they're saying, is this chance that Joe Biden will exit the presidential race. I've said this before. I think it's a 100% chance he's going to step aside, because I think Joe Biden's going to do what's in the best interest of the country. I truly believe that. I truly believe Biden will put country first. He will make the sacrifice for the good of democracy, unlike the other guy who on Thursday, on the 4th of July, he put out on Truth Social, quote, "Happy 4th of July to all, including our highly incapable president who choked like a dog during the debate." Where's Van Jones when we need him to go, "Wow, look, how presidential." And, you know, I saw that. I'm going, you know, is this who we want our kids to emulate? Is this it? Is the best we got? Scary stuff. I'm here to share some thoughts on where we go from here. I've asked our good friend, former Ohio congressman and political analyst Bob Ney to come share some thoughts. Bob, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Rick.
So what do you think of the Truth Social post? I mean, I got to tell you, I remember a time, and I'm pining back to the, you know, back to the early teens of the 2000s, and, you know, where your parents would go, you know, "We want you to be like the president. You want you to grow up and emulate someone who may not agree with any of them, but at least, you know, we're, you know, decent in public." This is ridiculous.
Well, for Trump, though, I thought it was quite mellow.
Yeah. Highly restrained. Okay.
He could have went worse. There's the other thing on the message, besides, you know, what he said. The problem is you've got the 4th of July. Any president or wannabe president or was former president, you have a 4th of July message, period. Veterans Day, Memorial Day. You have a Memorial Day, Veterans Day message only, you know? You don't mix.
Right.
You just don't mix anything political in it. You don't.
To your point, President Biden thanked the service members for their hard work in protecting the country, as you do during these holidays. The people who are out there fighting for freedom, you pay homage to them, and you leave it at that. But not in Trump world.
Nope. He never ever stops.
Scary stuff. Now, as I said, this this betting service, they say there's a 62% chance that Biden is going to exit the presidential race. Given the debate on that fateful Thursday, any thoughts?
Well, it's kind of complicated because right now, President Biden, he's talked with his family and top advisors, and he said he's going to stay in. Now, some people just this morning messaged me and said, well, they think he's going to get out. These are from the Democrat side. But here's my point on it. At this point in time, if there is one tiny indicator, for example, if the president would say, well, we're in a serious debate whether to get out and we'll know in 5 days. If he were to say that, it will start a domino avalanche.
Right.
Avalanche of people one after the other. And I can, you know, I can give examples of people that, you know, they've gotten in trouble. For example, one member comes out, and then the next one, and the next one, and it dominoes.
No, you've got to be in until the second that you're out. There's no waffling before the decision. So, people were telling me, no, he says he's in. Yeah, he's in until the second before he's out.
Now, I'm torn on whether he should get out or not. I thought he should have got out earlier this year, and then Trump would not have run. Now, people say I'm crazy, but I know if he got out, because at one point in time, look, and neither side's going to like to hear this, neither side, but only Trump can beat Biden and only Biden can beat Trump. Now, I think that's, at least from my analysis and my look, that's the way it is. Almost two candidates born for each other, in a sense, in 2024. If you take Biden out of the equation in January of this year, I think Trump's numbers would have tanked. Also, the 18 to 34s that Biden has lost would have come home. The, some of the Latino community, some of the 22% of the vote in the swing states that Trump has taken with the African-American community, I think would have come home. I think a lot of the undecided independents would have come home to a new Democrat candidate, but that didn't happen. So now I'm really, really torn on this, because one part of me says, look, you know, it's not good. And the only thing that can potentially salvage him is September the 11th. Let me throw this scenario out there. He goes, that's September 10th, I mean, September 10th debate, Rick, and he performs the same way. You tell me what's going to happen, you know, on September the 10th.
It's over.
It'll be over by the evening of September the 10th, with Democrats saying vocally he's done. But I'm a little torn. If the Democratic Party has its act together internally with the designated powers to be, I'll put it this way, and somebody can act as the lifeguard or the adult in the room to moderate if the president gets out, between all the people that want to be president, and that when I say moderate, it's not time to shoot at each other politically. Within a day, a new ticket has to be put together. So unless there's an exit strategy, then I think it's going to be difficult for, you know, the president to leave. If there's an exit strategy of here's the lineup, here's who is going to replace the president, and I don't know, Kamala Harris, or maybe she wants to run in that slot, I don't know. But if there's no exit strategy, then maybe he ought to stay in, because it's going to be so chaotic on that end of it. So I'm a little bit, you know, I'm torn. But
I think that's what's being talked about right now. I think that's what they're figuring out right now. Mm-hmm. I think it's a foregone conclusion that he's got to step aside, because I hate saying this, because I love Joe Biden. I love the things he's done. I love the policies that we've moved on. I love the fact that we're moving away from neoliberalism. We're reshoring manufacturing. We're investing in infrastructure. There's an excitement in work again that I haven't seen in my lifetime, but he can't deliver the punchline. And, right. You know, it's like any fight. You can't win a fight if you can't throw the punch.
It was painful for me to watch. Look, I'm not a Biden hater. I served in Congress. If you wanted to get something done in the Senate on the Democrat side, you went to Joe Biden, or, you know, Ted Kennedy, Joe Biden. You know, there's a few people you'd go to at the time. And he had a staff that my staff directly worked with on foreign affairs. And, you know, they were second to no one. So, you know, Biden had a lot of history over there. So when I watched the debate, I mean, it was painful. It wasn't like, oh, wow. You know, it was painful. I think for anybody that, you know, knows Joe Biden, that was a very difficult night. So now here's the aftermath. But here's the other thing I'll say, whether he leaves or he doesn't. This has to be decided, like, by the end of Friday night. It has to be decided, because it can't go on of, he'll think about it next week, or if he decides he's going to stay, let's say Saturday morning, for argument's sake, he decides I'm staying, that's it. Then everybody has to, you know, surround the president. Everybody has to support him on the Democratic side, and just go for it. No. Go for the election.
No, he decides he's in. If he stays, he stays. There's no, even if he's in a coma, I'm voting for him. Because it's the policies that I'm voting for. It's the people he's surrounded himself that I'm voting for. It's not just a person. You know, I keep saying Democrats aren't cult members. You can have a different leader to move the same policies. That's what we should be wanting. The outcomes from those policies, the direction that he has put us on to lead this nation. And also, look, we're in a moment of defending democracy. I think in one of the scariest moments in history, and I fear, and I talked about this a minute ago, you having served in Congress and have gone through, election certification, I fear that we've already had our last free and fair election on the presidential level, because I think if the Democrats win, I don't think the House certifies it. I don't think the Supreme Court puts up a fuss, and I think they allow it to go back to the House, and they anoint Trump as president. I think this is already, they're already wargaming this out. We're already seeing it on social media. This is what's in their heads.
Well, this is going to be the toughest in modern history in this sense, and I think you're on target on some things. Look, when I served in the House, if you would have asked me this question when I served there, and if a Democrat won, would we go for the Republican? I would, without hesitation, tell you no. If a Democrat won, we would certify the Democrat. I would tell you that. I know that would have been the case. I don't care Gingrich was Speaker or Hastert. It was irrelevant, or Boehner. We would have certified the results. I went through, you know, like Electoral College. And now, though, no, I'm not going to predict that it's not going to be complete chaos no matter what happens. You know, the margins of the House are close. Now, in reality, if Democrats win, I think there'll be enough, it's going to be close, but enough Republicans in marginal seats that would probably say, wait a minute, you know, and they would get so much pressure, because this whole country is just going to explode with anger if in either direction versus who was elected, that the House goes in a different direction, this country's just going to burst into anger big time.
I don't know that I absolutely agree with that. I just don't. I know there'll be a lot of social media anger. I know there'll be a lot of angry, you know, posts. I hope it doesn't come to this, and I hope you're right. I hope there are some.
Maybe you're right. Maybe I am getting older, because, you know, I did serve in a day where there would be anger over this kind of thing. The people would be angry. Of course, in those days, we didn't have WhatsApp and Instagram and Facebook, too.
Yeah, there is that. But, you know, the thing that gets me is, you know, we saw what happened on Monday in the Supreme Court, where you had a Supreme Court in a 6-3 decision go, we're going to give immunity to Trump and to future presidents. And the rhetoric has been that we're basically giving them, you know, immunity to do almost anything they want, and basically creating the, you know, the possibility of a king. And what I find interesting, while there's all this talk about what horrible could come out of it, none of it is about a ruthless Joe Biden, who now has immunity going after Donald Trump. Because I think, to your point a moment ago, everyone knows Biden is going to follow the rules. He's going to follow the law. He's going to follow precedent. He's going to follow historic norms. Unlike Trump, who, you know, like I said a moment ago, I think Biden, you know, it would be truly country first. I think Trump is all about Trump.
Yeah, and I think one way or the other, now this is trying to take an optimistic view in a pessimistic situation. I think one way or the other, after this election, I should say I hope, not think. I hope one way or the other after this election that this process goes back somehow, some way, the next time, to something in a version of normalcy.
Do you think it can?
I don't know. Well, I'll tell you how it can. Because I still know that the people, even though they feel helpless in a sense, they have a lot of power if they demand certain things, voice their opinion, that they, you know, they want a regular process that used to be that way.
Yeah.
Now, am I really, would I bet my car with you tonight? No, but I'm thinking after the next time, whoever wins, politics may change at that point in time.
Yeah. See, my fear is nothing ever changes without there being chaos, and that we will, unfortunately, for working people to take off the red hats and the blue hats, for us to, you know, to put aside those deep divisions, something horrible has to happen. Something that will pull us back together and talking to each other again. Because sadly, you know, like I've said before, I've had a lot of conservative friends over the years who we would enjoy having discussions and debating back and forth. That's all gone. It's now my side has to win and you have to lose. And that's not a good place.
I mean, 9-1-1 that night, I came out of the Capitol, and it was late at night, and the streets were running again, and a taxi came up. I took a taxi, And the cab driver looked at me. He was an older guy. And he said, you know, hello, Congressman. He saw the pin. He knew I was a congressman. And he said, you know, yesterday it was black and white and rich and poor and Democrat and Republican. He said, tonight we're all American. And I'll never forget that. Yeah. He was an older African-American guy. I'll never forget that.
Yeah, but what happens if you hunted him down today and found him? What would he think today?
I don't know.
So it's back to my point of the crisis.
I might be stuck in an old world.
Yeah, no, I mean, the crisis pulls us together. And I fear that that's the only way back. Scary times indeed. But Bob, as always, I appreciate the insight and the thought. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Rick.
Our good friend Bob Ney. I want to hear your thoughts. Or more likely, send some more angry emails. Because, look, I found the discussion to be helpful. I found the discussions to be productive. So as angry as you want, we got to get through this process so that we can then unite and move forward. But you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Right back.
You're listening to Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, scattered showers and thunderstorms. Otherwise, mostly cloudy, a low around 58. For Saturday, partly sunny with a high near 79. For Saturday night, showers and storms, a low near 60. Scattered showers and thunderstorms, some with heavy rain on Sunday, high of 79.
It's 64 at our studios.
The John and Gordy Show.
People don't realize there used to be radio schools.
It was a night school. Uh-huh. And my very first day, I walk up the stairs and there in the lobby is my instructor. He's laying on the couch, his arm over his head, and he's going, oh my God, I wish I'd gotten into real estate. That was the encouragement I got right away.
Weekday morning, 6 until 8 on Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I came across a story that it's election time. So the only time you really delve into what these Congress people say is at election time. People start digging for dirt, looking for, hey, what are they actually doing? And I love the fact that finally, someone is looking at my congressman, Scott, pardon me, Perry, and some of the insanity that he's been retweeting and spewing. And oddly enough, someone called him on what is being called an anti-Semitic post on one of his social media platforms. And lo and behold, it's been deleted. It's amazing how, you know, they stand by their words or their reposts in this event. And here to share some thoughts on this, I've asked our good friend Sarah Burris to come talk with us. Sarah's a reporter over at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. So my congressman is back in the news again for doing something stupid and promoting anti-Semitism and yay fascism while claiming that we're fighting fascism. It's really quite remarkable. Whenever he says something, it generally is the telltale sign of what they are doing.
Exactly. So the thing that I really love about this one is, so he posted this anti-Semitic meme on his campaign account, and the Jewish Insider spotted it and called the campaign and basically said, do you guys know this is actually kind of racist and Nazi-like? And when the second that they asked for a comment about it, oh my gosh, the meme disappeared.
You know, like you didn't screenshot that before you asked the question.
Yeah, that's the thing, is most of the people who write stories about this stuff have the wherewithal to screenshot this stuff. And the thing is that on the internet, nothing ever dies.
Right.
So, you know, I think he's lucky that that more people didn't see it on his Facebook page. But the reality is now everybody is talking about the fact that clearly he knew that it was bad because he deleted it. So, yeah. And it brings, I mean, it's basically just, it was a meme that was reinforcing stereotypes about, you know, Jewish people and money and bankers and the crook nose and monopoly and like all of this just complete crap, which, you know, I guess is all Scott Perry has to talk about right now. It's not like we have any real problems going on in the rest of the country, right?
And it's not like he's got a record of actually getting anything accomplished or doing anything or helping working people in any way. No, let's not actually do something. Let's just distract here.
Yeah, it's that time of year where I guess we just pretend like we have been doing something for the last 2 years, and, you know, instead we're just going to go to parades and post memes. Yeah. So,
not surprising. Look, I mean, Republicans have been doing this for the last couple of decades, but especially this last legislative session where the do-nothings have literally done nothing but cause chaos and mischief. And, oh, by the way, I hear that Jim Jordan, one of Scott Perry's brethren, he's got a conspiracy theory.
Oh my gosh. So Jim Jordan, bless his heart, has come up with this crazy plot about Hunter Biden's laptop. Like, this has been a big thing for Republicans for a while. Before the 2016 election, there was a letter that came out where a bunch of intelligence people basically said, there's something shady going on with this laptop. We think there's probably some Russian disinformation involved in this whole story. And Jim Jordan has been hacked off about that ever since. And so he has spent the last 4 years trying to do his own little mini investigation.
It's his own super sleuthing. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And so now he's interviewed like a bunch of CIA people and yada, yada, yada. And has put out this report where he declares, you know, I've uncovered all of this stuff. But one of the interesting people who read the report and talked about it was a former member of the CIA counsel's office who went through everything and was like, yeah, this doesn't make any sense at all. A lot of the problems that Jim Jordan has is that people commented on it. He said that we're working for the government who shouldn't be commenting on it, which they were contractors who weren't hired at the time. And I mean, it's just like, there's so much of it where he is attacking, it's more process than fact. And the fact is with the laptop is that they could tell that it had been tampered with. There's stuff that was put on there and taken off of there that that was not original. And even the dude who was working on the laptop from Delaware said that, has testified to that. So this is just like, and again, like, we have more important things that are happening in the world. And it's just like, God, not another stupid Hunter Biden laptop story. But here we are.
But understand, you know, if we're not talking about this, we're talking about the fact that they have no solutions or idea how to fix the actual problems. So we need these distractions, Sarah. You need the shiny stuff. You're like the cat with the laser pointer. You need that to keep people divided and distracted while they continue to do nothing and the people who fund them continue to get wealthier and more powerful.
And I mean, I think that is a big piece of this whole election cycle is that they've all of the things that they've done this year, I want to say it's like naming post offices and, you know, passing bills that are never, ever going to get brought up in the Senate and will never be signed. So every ounce of legislation that they have addressed is completely useless, or, you know, again, it's naming something.
No, but I agree. You know, there's part of me that goes, I understand messaging bills. I understand going, we know the Senate is never going to pass this. And even if they do, we know Joe Biden's never going to sign it. But we pass these bills because we're showing what our priorities are. We're showing the American people, this is what, if you give us more power, you give us more people in the Senate, you give us the White House, this is what we will do. And I got to tell you, the messaging bills that they've put forth don't help anyone but them.
Yeah, that's the problem, is that there's so much politics in this that it isn't giving any confidence to the American people that these folks are working on behalf of them as, you know, taxpaying representatives of their districts. And you know, I would say that the only valuable thing that they've done is name post office. And that's not even, you know, something that is necessary right now.
And look, we're in the middle of what I would argue is potentially a constitutional crisis coming down the road. As I said earlier, I don't know that we haven't already had our last free and fair election for president, because I think if the Democrat wins in November, I don't know that the Republicans in the House certify the election. I don't know the Supreme Court doesn't allow them to get away with it. And I don't know that the House doesn't install Trump as president, because they're laying the groundwork for this. And they're laying the groundwork for whatever Trump does is justifiable. And I understand some new audio out that kind of sheds a little bit of light on how even Trump justifies his evil behavior.
Yeah, that's the thing. This book that I've been covering for a while now is about Donald Trump's life at The Apprentice and hosting the show, and how that really built his identity and his empire at a time where, you know, he filed for bankruptcy 6 times for 5 different companies. And so he's not obviously the brightest businessman in the bunch. Or he is,
depending on who you ask.
Right. But at the Apprentice basically turned him into someone just by the sheer fact that they were saying he was someone. You know, like one of the conversations that they had, that he and the author had, they talked, I think, like 6 times for hours and hours and hours. Because if there's one thing that Donald Trump loves more than anything, it's talking about his success on the Apprentice.
Yeah.
It's like his one thing, right, that he can grab onto. And what Trump said is that nothing matters except for ratings. And he basically said, I can be evil, I can be mean to people, I can be cold and calculating and just generally awful. And no one cares. Yeah. All that matters is ratings. And it's like it seems like he has adopted that kind of philosophy into what his rallies have become.
Oh no, there's no question about that. In fact, he's bragged about every step of the way. You know, my debate rally, you know, ratings were the highest. My this ratings were the highest. It's always been about the ratings. So no surprise there.
Ratings and crowd sizes.
Yeah.
And obviously the two of those are somewhat intertwined. If you remember Sean Spicer saying that the crowd was bigger than anybody, both in person and online.
Yeah. More people saw that inauguration than have lived in the history of the world.
Right. And I mean, I know that there were a lot more people watching that inauguration online than with George Washington. He did not have a lot of online viewers for his. Yeah,
he didn't have many followers on Twitter back then, did he?
Right. Yeah.
But look, there are some. Look, I this is where, you know, falling down the rabbit hole of social media. I'm guaranteeing you there's somebody out there who's going to now say, you know, he's got more followers than George Washington, because they think it is as it has always been, and that, you know, they had the same tools. They didn't just use it as well as Donald does.
Right, of course, obviously. I'm sure there probably is a George Washington account. I wouldn't be surprised if somebody even had it verified.
Well, it's a lot easier now.
Right? I just imagine, like, all of the tweets being something about cherry trees and Mount Vernon.
Well, don't you remember, you know, like Glenn Beck had a book. I think it was Glenn Beck had that book where it was from George Washington, his horse's perspective. There was something in the book about George Washington's horse speaking, or some bizarre kind of, you know, made up fantasy history that they tried to push off. But look, you know, they're getting away with creating their own alternative reality. So am I surprised by it? No, not even a little bit. Am I surprised that a TV show shaped his political ideology? Not even a little bit, especially when you're talking about a political party that, you know, used to every election cycle have a platform that they ran on, that they passed. I don't know the last time the Republicans actually passed a party platform. I know in 2020 whatever Donald wants. Hear, though, that there's secret rumblings about a potential super secret platform coming out of this RNC convention. We hearing anything on that?
So the whole Republican Party platform thing has turned into a complete you know, S show, right? Like this has gone completely insane. So this whole thing began with Republicans saying that they are no longer going to pass the platform or have any of the debates over the platform in public. Used to be every time you had these big caucuses and big pieces of a party at their convention, it would be streamed on C-SPAN.com, or if you're very lucky, it would be on like C-SPAN 3 or something. And when it comes to the platform, right, this is basically the ideology that everybody in the party is going to follow from Donald Trump on down. And this time they've said, yeah, we're not going to do that in public anymore. Like, we're not going to have this battle anymore.
Yeah, we're not going to tell you what we're going to do.
And what was interesting, I think, is in the last one, they said, we're just going to have this platform. It's whatever Donald Trump wants. And they never put anything out.
Right.
So the last platform was secret. The negotiations over this platform are secret. And now there's like all of these evangelicals that are freaking out because Donald Trump has started to really backtrack on a bunch of the abortion stuff. So,
well, he wants to finally win.
Right. Like, he finally read some polls that were like, dude, you're losing this. You're losing this bad. And I think what I've heard from folks is that the campaign was really trying to figure out if they could just win with male voters. Like, if we just like butch up the campaign a lot, right, and have like these sneakers and everybody looks really tough or whatever, like maybe men would be more likely, because we're going to lose women. Like, they realize that there's just no way. And but it turns out that men do care about things like choice because of things like child support. It turns out that men care about whether or not their wives are going to die in childbirth. And so this has become like a really big problem for the Republican Party. But at the same time, so much of their base is this far-right evangelical group who is determined to maintain that anti-choice position in the Republican Party platform. And there are a couple of people who claimed from, I think they're from South Carolina, who said that they were on the party platform committee and were kicked off of it because they weren't Donald Trump loyalists. And now there are all of these you know, anti-choice groups who are saying, you know, is that position going to be moderated in the Republican Party platform now? Are we going to basically lose this? There are people shouting at the rain saying, you know, if Donald Trump changes the Republican Party platform, I'm not voting for him or any other Republican. So it's become like this big drama, and I am here for every single minute of it.
No, and look, I think the important part of this is, you know, Trump, as I said the other day, what we know from Donald Trump is loyalty is a one-way street. The second you aren't sufficiently loyal, or you're deemed not sufficiently loyal, under the bus you go. And, you know, you may be on Team Trump today, but you may disagree with something down the road, and boom, under the bus you go. Because the only person Donald Trump's loyal to is Donald Trump.
And I remember writing something, I think it's been maybe even 2 years ago, when Trump was just starting his campaign after the midterm election. I remember there being some kind of story where people from inside the campaign were saying that he didn't care about evangelicals and their positions anymore because who else were they going to vote for? You know, they didn't have any other options.
Yeah.
And so he kind of just decided, screw him. I'm just going to do whatever I want. I don't know if that has changed in the last couple of years, but there are only so many voters that you can alienate from your base. So good luck, mate.
It's going to be an interesting November. I mean, you know, you may not even have Biden on the ticket for all we know. So we don't even know who the Democrat may be potentially. So we'll see. Finally, I got to get your thoughts on. I hear the Washington football team is back in, or I mean the Commanders now. I wish they would have kept Washington football team. I liked that. But I hear I hear you got a senator there who's a little miffed.
Steve Daines, who's from Montana, like, this guy has no skin in the game. he doesn't care. Does Montana even have any kind of professional football operation?
No, I think they generally they vote. Generally, most people I know from Montana were Broncos fans. Go Broncos!
Yeah. So, Steve Daines is hacked off because they changed their name from the Washington Redskins to the Commanders. This has been, I don't know how many years ago, but it really feels like this has been going on for many, many, many years. And so I feel like if Steve Daines had a problem, he probably should have said something before now, because it's been the Commanders now for several years, and the branding has happened, and everybody has their T-shirts and whatever.
Yeah, and honestly, who cares at this point? I mean, is this really going to make, at this point, you know, revisiting and refighting this battle, is this something that's going to make people's lives better? Or I truly are, you know, maybe somebody who bought the shirt 30 years ago, but is it really going to make any real difference in the lives of working people? And the answer is no.
But for Steve Daines, he apparently met some guy who was the grandson of the guy who made the logo, who actually is a member of the Blackfoot tribe, which is what the logo is based off of. And so now Steve Daines is like, oh, I'm not going to give you, like where the Commanders used to play was at RFK Stadium. Right. And it, you know, it was big and beautiful and amazing, and then fell apart because nobody took care of it. And so they want funding to be able to rebuild the stadium. And Steve Daines is like, I'm not giving you the money until you, I don't think he wants to change the logo back, but he wants some kind of, he wants something in the logo that is reminiscent of the guy who designed it. Jeez. Or something. So it's just like,
we're going to have a little secret symbol in the back so that we can all feel like, oh, it's still there. We're going to put a small version of that symbol in the back. So and here's the thing. You had me at Steve Daines doesn't want to give them any money, because I think throwing money into a stadium, taxpayer dollars into stadiums, is an enormous waste of tax dollars. You want to have a coliseum for football games? We got billionaire owners who can most certainly raise the money to do that, and leverage these billion-dollar teams to be able to entertain them, and not take money from, you know, from food stamp programs or from infrastructure programs. You know, maybe build your own stadium with your own money. Just my thought. But hey, good to see our senators are keeping up with things that are really important.
Really important, essential matters that must happen before the election. Geez. Sure.
Sarah, as always, great stuff. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. Have an awesome weekend.
Our good friend Sarah Burris. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back to wrap things up. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1888. That was the day that the spark was lit that touched off what came to be known as the Match Girl Strike in East London. The Match Girls were workers at the Bryant and May Match Factory. Matches were in high demand. The workers struggled under horrible conditions. If the workers were late, they were fined a half day's pay. For 14 hours a day, they toiled. The factory used white phosphorus that contributed to a bone cancer known as Fossey Jaw. Both Sweden and the United States had banned the dangerous phosphorus, but it was still legal in England. The plight of these workers caught the attention of Annie Besant. Annie was a socialist and women's rights activist who wrote for a weekly newspaper called The Link. She published an article about the deplorable conditions in the match factory. Outraged, the managers demanded their workers to sign a statement saying that Annie Besant's story was false. When one worker refused, she was fired. In response, 1,400 match girls walked off the job. Progressive newspapers across England called for a boycott of Bryant and May matches. From there, the women formed a union and asked Besant to serve as their leader. For 3 weeks, she helped the strikers with their work action and to negotiate with management for safer working conditions. The company agreed to hire back the workers who had been fired. They also agreed to drop the harsh fining system, but they would not stop using the dangerous white phosphorus. In 1891, the Salvation Army opened up its own factory using a less dangerous type of red phosphorus. Finally, in 1901, Bryant and May, under public pressure, stopped using the white phosphorus. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Gotta tell you, what a week it's been, honestly, truthfully. You know, the fact that we're in this moment, the fact that we're looking down the barrel of the end of democracy. And look, I don't say this easily. I try not to be hyperbolic. I try not to be the sky is falling, oh my gosh. But listen to what the right is saying. They are coming right out and saying, we're coming for it all. We are going to repeal the New Deal. We're going to repeal the 20th century. We're going to take it back to the good old days where the robber barons were kings and you peasants knew your place. And that's the most important part of this, because you do have to ask yourself, each person in this country, when they go to vote in November, they have to ask themselves that age-old question. Which side are you on? When it all is done, when they have repealed the 20th century, when they've put our wealth class in their proper place, when the oligarchs truly, with full-throated immunity, when they are running this country, which side of that equation are you on? Are you on the desperate and the disposable? Are you going to be one of those people working for poverty wages in desperate conditions because you don't have a choice? Now, they couch this stuff in terms of you're going to have liberty and freedom and competition and you're going to go out and do all these. No, that's not generally how it works for the majority of people. Will there be some? Sure. But for the vast majority of people, life will once again be brutish and short, chaotic and painful, and a constant struggle. Now, what does that mean? That means we may end up back in the day. So when the head of the Heritage Foundation says, you know, it'll be a bloodless revolution, you know, if the left lets it, what he's saying is, as long as you don't resist, as long as you don't question, dear leader, or the policies that they're going to force you to live under, everything will be fine. Now, granted, we're going to take away all of the things that you have become accustomed to. We are going to change America fundamentally in ways that most of us can't even fathom. But the people who have gamed this out, the think tank crowd, they know exactly where they're taking us. And they are thrilled. And they're spending a lot of money to convince us that, no, this is better. Getting rid of the minimum wage, getting rid of maximum hour laws, getting rid of OSHA, getting rid of the EPA, getting rid of all of that. Unleash the power of corporate America. And we've seen it. We've seen that in the past. It's burning rivers. It's horribly polluted communities where they built houses on top of hazardous waste dumps. It's all kinds of, well, all kinds of not good. So the question, we have to ask ourselves, which side are we going to be on? The ones that are going to profit from it or the ones that are going to suffer under it? Because they're being very honest. They're telling us the quiet parts out loud every single day. They hate America. They hate this country. And they're telling you, we hate this place. We're going to fundamentally change it, change every aspect of it. So all of the things that you're used to, accustomed to, take for granted, well, they're all on the chopping block. And the question is, how will we respond? Will this be a moment of unity for working people? Will this be a moment when people come together in the streets? And maybe, unfortunately, there may be bloodshed because they're already talking about using the military against us. And I know it's okay as long as they're going after, you know, the right people. So I got to tell you, we are in an, what's that saying? May you live in interesting times. We are certainly in interesting times. And the question is, how do we respond? So for all those people who are saying, you hate democracy, you hate America, you hate Joe Biden. No, I love Joe Biden. I think Joe has done an amazing job as president. I think it's time for him to hand the mantle off and to keep that vision going. But it's time for the rest of us to start going, how do we fight what is coming? Because our corporate-controlled media, they're not paying attention. Not at all. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any of the program? Grab the podcast. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@thericksmithshow.com. You're listening to Mad Radio. WMDX 1580 AM Columbus. W224 EG Madison. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.